Robin Hood Radio welcomes you to David Freeman's Science Insider with your host, the senior science editor of the Huffington Post, David Freeman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Science Insiders. Unless you love snow and ice and chilly temperatures, it hasn't been a great time in the Northeast, so that's why I'm out here in sunny La Jolla, California, at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. And I'm here to interview Dr. Anna Shurevich, who is a researcher in marine bioacoustics. So welcome to Science Insider.
Thanks, I'm happy to be here.
So we're sitting here on the side of the ocean looking out of the pier, the Scripps Pier, and all looks well in the ocean, but I guess there's some problem with sound pollution. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. The noise levels in the ocean have been increasing steadily over the last 40, 50 years or so, since there's been increasing shipping for all the goods that people are sending across the world. So that is really creating some problems for animals in the ocean that rely on sound.
So what kind of, I know whales make sounds, what other kind of animals make sound, and what do they do with the sound?
So a lot of marine animals make sound. Fishes also, there's lots of different species of fishes that are quite vocal. A variety of invertebrates also, so things like shrimp, or really snapping shrimp. Even urchins, when they eat, they kind of graze and scrape on the algae, that produces sound as well.
So they're not really producing the way that we think of producing vocal sounds, they're producing with their activities.
So there's a combination of both. So in case of, urchins, it's really their activities that are creating this kind of background noise. But in case of fishes, for example, they can do both. Some of them produce sound purposely in order to communicate probably with other animals, but some are also results of, like, when they're swimming and moving their fins and rubbing against things. Those things produce sounds.
But the thing that we think about whales and dolphins producing sound. So how they have a very complicated sound, system, I guess. What is it that, and what happens to them when the ocean gets noisy? There are lots of propellers, ships going by. What happens to their behavior?
So there's a lot of different effects that really can result. One is they just are not able to talk to each other anymore. Some really intense sound can not just prevent them from hearing each other, but they can injure them, because various air cavities in their body can rupture from the vibrations. But also, for example, there's been a lot of work recently where we've discovered that reef fish use sounds to find the reef where they're going to settle and kind of establish themselves and grow up. So disruption of any of those functions can be very important.
So how big a problem is noise or sound pollution in the ocean? Is it everywhere? Is it only around coastal areas?
So it really depends where you are. There are some parts of the ocean that are very noisy. Basically, if you think in terms of large shipping lanes, so between North America and Asia, the North Pacific, it can get very loud. Atlantic also even louder. But there's also you can find some basins or some areas that are going to be more isolated and less noisy. One thing about ocean and ocean sounds, though, is that it tends to propagate over very long distances under the right circumstances. So even if you are in one spot and you don't see any ships around, that doesn't mean that you still can't hear ships from long, long ways away.
So that's interesting. I know that sound propagates much faster in water than it does in air, correct? How much faster does it propagate?
It's about 5 times faster. It's 1,500 meters a second, roughly, versus 300.
Wow. So, and what about distance? You say it goes farther. How much farther will it go?
Well, so it depends on the frequency or the pitch of the sound. The low-frequency sounds tend to travel very far. They can travel tens or hundreds, maybe even thousands of kilometers in the right circumstances, whereas really high-pitched sounds will travel much shorter distances, maybe a couple of kilometers or even a few hundred meters.
So how do you, tell us about your research. Are you using buoys at different places around the ocean? What have been your findings recently, and how do you collect the data?
Oh, those are lots of questions all at once.
Well, take whatever you want to answer. I think how do you collect data, and how do you analyze that data to find out these ideas about how the animals are being affected?
So for the most part, we have recorders that we deploy, and they sit on the bottom of the ocean for a long time period, 6 months up to a year, and they just record continuously all sounds that are there. And we'll go out on the ship, deploy this package that has lots of batteries and lots of hard disks. And after some amount of time, we'll go back, pick it up, And that's how we retrieve the data. We have to get the instrument back, and then we do a lot of processing. We have a whole bank of computers that lets us analyze. We collect per deployment up to a terabyte of data.
But how do you get the these microphones on the bottom of the ocean? How deep do they go?
It really depends on what you're interested in looking at. But we've mostly, if you're too shallow, it gets very loud. So we like to place, I mean, a few hundred meters up to maybe 1,000, or we've even had some deeper than that, up to 3,000 meters.
And how do you place them?
Sorry, how do...
How do you place these microphones that deep?
Oh, you just kind of shove them over the side of the boat, and you make sure that all of the equipment is pressure rated so that they can go to the whatever depth you're going to deploy it, because there's great pressures at depth. And then they have acoustic releases. So when we come back, there's usually a weight that's attached at the bottom. So you send a signal, the release ideally will release the weight, and there's enough flotation in the instrument, then it'll come up to the surface and we can pick it up.
And then you bring it back here to Scripps to analyze it?
Yes.
So that's a lot of computer processing. That's very complicated, I'm sure. Is that right?
Yeah, there is a lot of computers and a lot of crunching of things.
So if you were to kind of characterize overall, well, let me ask you this about the what evidence do we see that animals are being affected negatively by this increasing noise in the oceans?
You know, there's a lot of different kind of lines of evidence where people in the kind of in your neck of the woods out on the East Coast recently have found that increased noise levels actually stress whales out. They have increased levels of stress hormones. And this is from shipping. This isn't, you know, sonar type events, which are, again, there's been instances, for example, there was a famous incident in the Bahamas where beaked whales got stranded during naval sonar exercises. That was kind of a unique situation where the geographic location and everything kind of amplified the effects of what was going on with the sound, and these animals ended up stranding, basically trying to probably move away from the sound source.
Because they're confused, or because it's painful for them? Why would they move away?
It was probably both. The autopsies on the ones that ended up dying found that they had lesions and injuries, and those injuries themselves, though, weren't what killed them. It was probably that they just caused confusion that ended up stranding them on the beach, and then clearly a whale out of water is not in a good place. So
what would it be like for a person? I'm trying to imagine what it might feel like for an animal. I mean, I'm a whale. I'm in the ocean. I'm making calls. I'm hearing calls. And then suddenly a ship passes, maybe not even so close by, but the prop noise and I guess. What is that like for the animal beyond saying it stresses them out? What does that mean?
Well, those are the kinds of questions that we're really trying to answer now, looking both at that very fine scale of what kind of what behavior response animals have. I mean, it'll depend a lot on what the animals are doing at the time. We've seemed to be finding that if they're feeding, then they're more likely to endure whatever noise is around them and to proceed to eat, versus if they're engaging in something else, like if they're just traveling, then they may be more likely to move away. And it's kind of, you know, when you're standing on a corner and there is a ambulance going by, and it'll be this annoying noise, but you know that it'll go away. So I think they have some sense of, you know, where the sound is and how far away it is, and can gauge their reaction. If you see the ambulance coming straight at you, you might try to jump and move out of the way. But if it's just passing by, you'll know that it'll go away, and you'll just keep doing whatever it is you're doing.
So, and you mentioned a moment ago about the there's a noise of plane going over, but you mentioned military, and of course, military, in addition to having ships that are passing by, they're using sonar. So, what's the military's role in all of this?
So, the military,
the Navy, is it mostly the Navy?
Right. It's all the part of the work that we're doing, since it's all ocean. Yes, it's all Navy, and. Because of the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which is a legislation that was passed about 40 years ago, they're required to enact all kinds of monitoring and mitigation activities anytime they're doing anything in the ocean that might affect marine mammals. So one of the projects that I'm working on, if we're going back to some of the work and projects, is here in Southern California, we have a very large offshore Navy range. And so we do monitoring for the Navy, where we have instruments and we record and monitor year-round for presence of different species of whales.
And where is that? Where is that monitoring taking place?
It's just offshore here off of It's called the Southern California Range, and it's a couple hundred miles offshore.
So they're required by law to see what's happening to the animals in the area, is that right? But how do you, again, you're talking about measuring hormone levels in the animals, and that seems like a fairly invasive thing to do as well, to collect that. So to what extent are you concerned that the monitoring is also creating problems for these animals?
Well, so the measuring hormones, that I wasn't actually, that was a different study. I didn't do that personally. But what we do here just is recording. So all we really do is deploy a recorder and sits at the bottom of the ocean. We do nothing to the animals at all. So that's one of the nice things of passive acoustic monitoring is that you really aren't impacting the animals. Sometimes you get asked, "Oh, do you have appropriate permits?" And I can say, "Well, I just put this on the ocean. I'm listening to sounds. I can use it to study fish or noise or anything else. It's not really directed at anything in specific."
And so, what has the Navy responded in any way? Made any changes in its practices as a result of the kind of research that you're doing?
Well, they have the National Marine Fisheries Service, the NOAA's agency. They have guidelines that and issue permits to the Navy and what kind of activities they're allowed to do, and that's what they adhere to. So we're basically on the monitoring end of that, where we're just providing to the Navy information on the presence and abundance of animals.
But your primary interest is for the welfare of the animals?
My primary interest is really the health of the ecosystem, because I think it's, rather than focusing on an individual animal, individual species, I think it's really important to consider the ocean as a whole. And that is the part where the noise in general concerns me, not just the, you know, Navy puts out noise out there occasionally. It's really the shipping that's prevalent and persistent, as is something that we all contribute to.
So every time you buy something that's been imported, it's been come across the ocean. Have you changed your own consumer habits as a result of your work?
You know, not as much as I should. it's hard, because it's hard. I mean, I try to, you know, eat local, but it's hard to buy clothes local.
So I think, you know, looking out here at the Pacific, it's such a huge, vast expanse. It's hard to imagine that the volume of shipping would be so great that it would really cause a problem. Do you have what's it like out in the middle of the ocean? How much of the ocean is trafficked by these big vessels?
You know, it's remarable that, so there's been a study done here off coast where they have found that every 20 year the noise levels double. So like the overall background noise doubles every 20 years. And so over the course of 40 years, we have quadrupled total background levels.
It's 4 years time, four times louder than it was 40 years ago?
And it was in the 60s.
And so do you see evidence of the way the animals, I know that we're near a place where the whales, you know, are migrating, right? Do you see evidence of that affecting their behavior?
We haven't seen any changes, well, necessarily in migration patterns that we can link to that. What we do notice is that the animal calls do seem to be tracking this increase in background noise, because they have to presumably be calling louder to still be heard. It's kind of the, you know, the cocktail party effect, where you're just talking loud enough so that you're still heard. So they're still at the point where they can communicate. And there are times when really the whales become the dominant ambient noise at some of the kind of higher frequencies. But it's really in the very low frequencies where these are sounds that we can barely hear, is where blue and fin whale calls are, and that's where most of the shipping noise are, and they're the two species that are most likely going to be affected by the increased shipping.
So the very big whales must produce an extremely loud sound when it calls, correct?
Yeah, they do. They're some of the loudest animal sounds.
Have you heard that? Have you been in the water to hear it yourself?
I've never heard them in the water. I've heard humpbacks in the water before when they were distant, but they're so low frequency that even if you were next to a blue whale that's making sound, you wouldn't actually probably hear it. You would more kind of feel vibration in your, you know, lungs and air cavities, kind of just your chest vibrating from the sound.
And they make higher frequency sounds as well, or it's all at that very low frequency sound?
Blue whales are actually very interesting, because they, different populations in different parts of the world make different sounds. So the ones here off of California, they have two different segments to their song, and you can hear some parts of it, there is some parts, like in the North Atlantic, the blue whales there have very low tonal calls that you can't hear at all. So it really is, in the case of blue whales, it's region dependent whether you can hear some of their calls or not.
And what about dolphins or porpoises? What you haven't mentioned them very much. What's the connection with the research with those guys?
You know, I'm somewhat biased. I prefer the low frequency big things, but I've done a little bit of work on beluga whales, which are a smaller whale that they're very vocal. They're actually known as the canaries of the sea because of how vocal they are, and they chirp and whistle and echolocate and make all kinds of crazy sounds.
And so what about sonar? You haven't talked about that to the extent that you're not going to divulge military secrets. How much of a contributor is that to this problem? You talk mostly it's about shipping and the prop noise, the noise of the hulls or whatever. But let me ask you this. What about other causes? I think, you know, wind, does that produce a sound noise? What are the other causes of sound in the ocean?
Yeah, so wind is also a contributor. And as the sea state and wind levels increase, the noise levels go up. But they're kind of in separate frequency band than shipping, for example. They're higher frequencies in several hundred hertz to a few kilohertz. The other important contributors that are more kind of impulsive, if you will, signals, kind of occasional signals. There is a lot of seismic, like earthquakes, and just general rain. You can, you know, all kinds of physical phenomena. In terms of human impact, there are all kinds of coastal development that contribute a lot to the surface or to the noise in coastal areas, from pile driving or really any kind of construction. And then also the oil and gas exploration surveys are very important contributor to noise in some areas.
Because what do those do? I mean, what's involved there? Is there blasting? What is it?
So they use what are called air guns. And they use these air guns to map sediments underneath the ocean floor to look for, I guess, chambers with oil. And they're basically little explosions that they, it's really actually a gas or a bubble implosion that produces a very loud sound.
So I think in one of your recent studies, you found some relatively quiet areas in the ocean. Was that the Pacific?
Yes, we looked at sounds at a variety of places in kind of tropical and subtropical central and western Pacific Ocean, and we found that in a lot of those places the background noise level, especially these kind of shipping frequencies, the low frequencies, were more comparable to the noise levels we had here in California in the 60s than they are to what we see today.
So does that mean these are going to become kind of refuges where the animals naturally gravitate?
Well, that's an interesting question that I guess we don't know yet. There's certainly, for a lot of these large baleen whales, they do annual migration to a large extent, where they go to tropical areas in the winter to calf and mate. And the problem with those areas, however, is they're not as productive, so they can't find enough food necessarily there to sustain themselves. So they go to high latitude, to polar areas in the winters to feed. So we haven't I'm not familiar with anybody actually looking at how long the whales are spending at different times, but I think it would be interesting or important to at least be aware of the potential that those areas might have to provide some pristine or more pristine environments in terms of acoustic noise.
But they're trapped to some extent that they have to migrate. They can't stay in one place all year.
Yeah, that's right.
So how do you, I guess... Well, let's go back to the military issue about sonar and about to what extent that's a contributor to this problem.
So the thing with sonar, again, is that there are some areas where there's a lot of use, like Southern California Bight is a very important big testing range. And there's been a very large experiment going on here for the last 3 years, and there's two more years of fieldwork where there's a consortium of scientists who are testing they're putting tags on animals and then trying playing back simulated sonar to see if and what kind of response the animal have. And what they've discovered so far is that it's a very complicated response. It's not like, you know, one for one. We do this and the animal does that. It depends what they're doing, their behavioral state, all kinds of factors go into play. So it's a very complicated issue, but there's... Oh, there's... lots of Navy and other military presence here in San Diego, like these helicopters. So the sonar, at least these mid-frequency sonars, that is what all the questions have been about, it's going to be a more isolated events and more isolated problems, because the sound propagates, the sound from these sonars doesn't propagate over tens or hundreds of kilometers. It propagates only several kilometers. So it's kind of, there's difference in scale and difference in, and some complexity in how do you determine what exactly is, how, what the impact is.
So can you tell us a little bit about how whales make the sounds, make their calls biologically? What's going on inside of a whale?
Oh, that's really a very hard question. They're kind of big, so they're hard to keep in a place where you can see what they're doing. So in terms of very large whales, we don't really know. The assumption is that it's some kind of movement of air between different air sacs in the body, but we don't really know the details. Some dolphins and smaller whales, it's been studied a little bit more because you can actually keep them in a tank and see the process. So they have these phonic lips that they can pass sound through. But then also, which I think is a cool and interesting part, the dolphins and toothed whales, they echolocate. So they use sound for finding prey and sensing their environment. And they, to do this, you have to send out a very narrow beam of sound. So they have this, we call it a melon, but it's basically this fatty object in their forehead that they use to focus the sound into a beam and then send it out, and then they listen for echoes back.
Wow. So in your research here, do you feel optimistic that things are going to change for the better, or is this a problem that's going to continue as the Earth gets busier and busier?
I guess it depends on the day. Some days I feel better than others, but I don't know. I tend to think that our consumerism can't go on forever, so at some point we'll run out of resources to a certain extent, and we won't be able to ship things anymore. We'll have to come back to doing things more locally, so maybe one day there'll be less traffic. I don't know.
Does this problem not get as much, I mean, I guess it doesn't get as much attention as global warming, and is it, do you feel that there's a certain level of ignorance in that among, say, policymakers that's keeping changes from happening, or is that really not an issue?
I think it's really easy for us to ignore what's happening under the ocean because we don't see it. We don't really have any real link and experience of it. So it can just go by unnoticed.
Is there anything to do to create, to abate the noise, short of, you know, curtailing the activities of these ships? In other words, is there any technology that would allow you to absorb and deflect some of the sound?
There has been a bit of work done in trying to quiet the ships, so to make them just more acoustically quiet. And I think that has worked to a large extent, because the if I remember correctly, from the predictions of how much the noise level should be going up in terms of size of the fleet and size of ships, it hasn't been tracking it in the way that the models from, you know, the old days would have predicted. So we are making technological advancements, but at the same time, there's bigger and more ships going out. So,
and how about, and cruise ships, of course, too. The cruise industry is enormous. To what extent is that a contributor to the problem? Is there a way to quantify shipping versus cruise ships, recreational vehicles?
Different vessels do have different signatures. So, yeah, you could theoretically delineate between different types of vessels. I actually don't know what cruise ships sound like specifically, but I know that there's a concern in a number of national parks up in Alaska, for example, where they take, in Glacier Bay, where they take cruise ships up. There are some concerns about the impact of that noise on marine life there.
So another thing to feel bad about, right? If you're going to go on a cruise, or you're going to buy a car or clothing from overseas. What are there specific, I know there are specific shipping lanes, right? Do you focus on those to see what's happening in those particular lanes? And where are the lanes, actually?
So the major lanes, so Long Beach and L.A., which is about 100 miles north of here, is one of the largest shipping ports. And so there's lanes that head out west from there. But a lot of the lanes otherwise go up and down the coast. So Central California up to San Francisco and up to Seattle, there's a lot of shipping. And I guess some shipping also goes here south past San Diego. But really, some of the busiest shipping lanes are out of Long Beach and Santa Barbara or Los Angeles. And there is a channel there between Channel Islands and the coast of California where those shipping lanes actually go through. Some of the busiest shipping lanes in the world. And there's also some of the favorite blue whale summer feeding habitats.
And what about, are there specific ports? I mean, I guess they're coming from all over in other parts of Asia and so on, correct? Are there kind of direct lines to these different points so that there are a few discrete channels, or is it pretty much distributed all over?
So the fastest route from California to Asia is actually up through Alaska because of the Great Circle Route. So the ships all actually go north. They pass kind of just by or through the Aleutian Chain, just barely into the Bering Sea, and they come back down along the east coast of Asia. So they all tend to go north if they're going that way.
So what, I know you've just finished some research. What's next for you? What's next on your agenda?
So one of the things that we're kind of really focusing on right now is we have these really amazing long-term records here in Southern California, about 7 or 8 years of passive acoustic recordings. And so what I'm working on is trying to understand better the habitat use of blue and fin whales in Southern California bite based on those years of data. So basically get a year-round idea of when and where they're present and maybe why. And a lot of the studies are usually based on ship-based surveys, which only happen when the conditions are really decent. So we know a lot about whale presence here in the fall, kind of summer and fall, but winter and spring are the questionable times, and that's what we're hoping to get from some of these recordings.
And so will you be going on a ship yourself?
Not immediately. I actually don't have any whale-related ship time scheduled anytime soon.
So again, just kind of summing up here, we have a couple of minutes left. What do you think you'd like to make sure people know about your research or about the problem of sound pollution in the ocean that we haven't covered?
You know, so we've talked about whales because everybody loves whales, but sound is just as important to fish, and fish can be quite vocal and contribute substantially to overall background noise. And a lot of, I think we can use sound to help us protect to a certain extent some of the more endangered or fished out species and help them recover, because a lot of the fish species, they produce sound when they're spawning. So by listening for these fish sounds, we can identify spawning grounds, help protect them, and help populations recover, and potentially then also enable, you know, fishing to resume at some point down the line. But I think there is an underused faucet there of other species that are very vocal, because sound is very important in the marine environment in general, and we should, you know, go beyond the whales and look at other species as well.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thank you so much for speaking with me, Anna Shurevich. I really appreciate it. Very interesting work, and thanks very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Science Insider with David Freeman, the senior science editor of the Huffington Post, produced in cooperation with Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com, on the web.